I'm your host, Garth Braithwaite, and this is Web Friends. So this show is about the web and the friends who make it. And one of the reasons I put together this show was to help you get to know other web people and hopefully impart to you some great advice from other talented content creators. And I promise that is a completely selfless reason for putting together this show. However, it's not the only reason I'm putting it together. There are many other reasons that happen to be a little bit more selfish. One of my favorite reasons is that I have some web friends that I don't have much of an excuse to chat with as often as I might like. So I thought I'd book some of them as guests on the show. And you're about to hear an interview with Val Head, who happens to have some great advice and is a friend I'm happy to have an excuse to chat with. I met Val years ago at the last Flashbelt conference, where I helped interview her on a previous podcast, but somehow haven't had much of a chance to chat with her since. Val is a designer and consultant out of Philadelphia, but if you look at her speaking schedule, it would seem that she is rarely there. In fact, in just a few short days, she'll be speaking at an event apart in Seattle, Washington. On top of speaking, she also hosts the Lady in Tech podcast, which you should go listen to after this. She started the Web Design Day conference in Pittsburgh, which had an awesome lineup last year. She wrote the Pocket Guide to CSS Animations, which you should go read, and authored a video series called CSS Animations for Lynda.com, which you should go watch. Now that you know Val a little bit more, let's jump to the interview right after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode of Web Friends is sponsored by Media Temple. When you need to host WordPress, either for yourself or for your clients, you want something fast and reliable. Media Temple's new managed WordPress hosting comes with unlimited bandwidth, 3 WordPress installs, a one-click staging environment, automatic WordPress core and security updates, and their signature 24/7 support. Go to mediatemple.net, use the promo code GOODSTUFF, and get 25% off your first month. WebFriends is also sponsored by Campaign Monitor. Sending email campaigns doesn't need to be a chore. Campaign Monitor makes it fun, easy, and beautiful. Try your hand at their template builder and have a responsive email template ready in 60 seconds. Campaign Monitor also lets you offer their services to your clients at your prices. And if you need help creating better emails, Campaign Monitor just released a free ebook with their top 100 email campaigns of 2013. Go to campaignmonitor.com and get started today. A huge thanks to our launch sponsors, Media Temple and Campaign Monitor, for supporting Good Stuff and Web Friends.
First question. Mm-hmm. What advice have you received while you've been a web professional or web creator that you found super helpful? Like what has really kind of stuck with you while you've been working in the industry?
Wow, this one was, well, actually both your questions are really hard ones. I'm like, oh, I have to think about these. That's terrible.
all two of them.
I know. I'm like, oh, you didn't tell me they were skill testing questions. No. It's hard to decide because I feel like, you know, kind of like your whole reasons for starting this podcast, I feel like I've learned so much from the community, and the fact that the community is here and so available that it's really changed, you know, the way like my life and my career and all that stuff. So it's kind of hard to decide, but I think the most helpful advice I've ever gotten is to do personal projects. And even more so than that, more important than that, is to finish personal projects, because it's so easy to start them, and finishing them is basically the hardest thing ever.
Yeah.
Because you basically spend 90% of your time thinking you're almost done. And you're almost done for a very, very long time before you're done. And it's so easy to give up. And especially with personal projects. I know for me, I usually go through this strange period of like self-doubt right about the time it's almost done. Just like, it's almost done. I know I still have so much work left to do on it. And no one's going to care anyways. And everyone will hate it. So I shouldn't bother finishing it.
Oh, it's so sad and true.
Yeah, it's like, you know, 3 weeks before you were like, yes, this is awesome. I can't wait to finish it and show everyone. And then there's just this weird turn where you're like, it's all crap. I hate it.
Yeah.
or either that, or, and like that combined with the like, and I have so much work left to do before I could ever call this done. So it's really hard to finish, but basically by actually finishing the projects you start, I mean, it feels so much better than looking back on all these half-started projects. And you kind of, you know, that's just one thing more to set yourself apart from everyone else, I guess, is it's really hard to finish projects. So if you do, you've gotten that much more of advantage over like every other average person. So
yeah,
there's that.
Do you have any projects that you wish that you had finished and they're still kind of, any ones that you can talk about? Are there any of these open loops still kind of hanging open?
It's really funny, but earlier today on Facebook, an ex-coworker of mine posted a picture of this chart that me and him were, out of a random lunch conversation, we decided we would make a coffee monster, and it would basically be a little stuffed animal, a monster, with an Arduino inside that would measure the weight of the coffee craft thingy that we had in the office to let us know if it was empty or full. And we basically got like maybe 80% of the way through making this monster. He was doing a bunch of the electronic stuff. We'd gotten the XBs, gotten like all the data transfer working,
yeah,
figured out how to weigh the pot. I had the monster made. We just had to like put it together and we never finished it. And I mean, this was like 3 years ago, maybe. And I guess he must have been cleaning out his desk because he's still there. Part of the reason we didn't finish it is because I'm a big jerk and I took another job. But, you know, he's still there and he must have been cleaning out his desk or something. And he just posted this graph because we charted some of the, you know, just to see like what the weights were and graphed it out just to see how the changes were. And he just posted that. And I was like, oh, man. I wish we'd finished that. It would have been so fun.
Mm.
And it's like, we were so close. Why didn't we?
So where are the parts now? Did you kind of respectively take your parts, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think we pretty much split the electronics. I still have the body of the monster with a big hole in it for the Arduino. And I think he's got all the sensors. No, we both have an XB. And, you know, it's just like, aw, so sad. Sorry, Tom.
Yeah. There's nothing sadder than cool projects that go unfinished.
Yeah, and it's like one of those things where it would also, at the point we stopped, it had gotten really hard. We were getting like weird. It was hard to get everything connected and communicating consistently, but it's just like, I really wish we'd stuck with it and finished that one.
Yeah. So then how do you recommend, now, this is one of those lessons that are learned through the hard school, school of hard knocks, there you go. But how do you go about trying to finish projects now? Are you doing anything different now than you would have done back then?
I think setting deadlines and just maybe, I don't want to say like rushing through things and getting things done fast, but like setting a time for yourself that is at least somewhat reasonable, and that reasonable bit is really hard, where you can actually get this done. And, you know, like for that project that we never finished, we're kind of like, it'll be fun. We'll do it at lunch or whatever. And like, we never really were like, we're going to have it done by this day.
Yeah.
And maybe that would have helped. But like a kind of similar-ish project I finished really recently is last week when I was out in Smashing Conference. Sebly Delisle and I put together this intro for the conference. And, you know, we basically did it in like less than a month, put this whole intro together, and then went out there and like displayed it for the whole conference.
Now how did you do it remotely working together with him? Because this is like an installation type of thing, right? You had large projectors and lasers, which I'm assuming came from Seb.
Yeah, he has a laser connection. I cannot get you lasers. I'm sorry.
So,
but he essentially has a guy he can call who will show up with a laser.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So then how do you though collaborate on something on a project like that? Because you can't like, hey, let's go practice.
Yeah. Well, we had it. You know, we used GitHub. The whole project was essentially an open frameworks app. So, you know, we just had shared code and GitHub so we could both run the project locally on our computers. Not the same as a projector, obviously. Right. I don't have a laser.
You just hold up a laser pointer on your screen.
Just pretend.
Yeah.
You know, we did it pretty, you know, we started with a bit of a storyboard, some ideas, that kind of thing. And then, of course, everything kind of changed once we got stuff in code. Then I went up a couple days early and we basically sat in his kitchen and just coded for a couple days, which is maybe a terrible way to see Brighton, but whatever. It was fun. And so it was kind of like the last maybe 4 days right before was just like constantly working on this, and probably where, you know, 90% of the work of the finished thing everyone saw got done, because it was just like, oh crap, this has to be shown in front of an audience on, you know, Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
It's Friday. Guess we better get to work.
Yeah. And you get into the, I call it salted earth coating, where you just like, it may not even be good and you don't want to look at it afterwards. Like it's just get it done sometimes.
Well, that's the kind of interesting thing about this one in particular, because it basically was writing code that only had to ever really run once. It actually ran twice. People liked it so much, we brought it back to end the conference, okay. Which is pretty great. So that's very validating. But it was like, this basically has to run once, and it's not like it's ever going to be edited or updated or amended later. It's like, this thing runs and it's done. So I know I definitely wrote some code that was of a questionable nature, the longest if statement I've ever written. But it worked, and it was pretty stable. It would probably run again, though it never really will, because it's been done.
That's awesome.
It's like, oh, sorry, project, you're over.
So how did that initiate? Like, again, you and Seb are not anywhere close. Seb is in Brighton and you are in Philadelphia. Did he just ping you or did you ping him and say, hey, let's do this thing? Like, how does that happen?
Well, I mean, we, through the Creative.js site and some other things, we talk on the internet a lot. So he got approached by Smashing Comp to do this intro, and he's like, could probably use some help with this. especially as when it came to like what it should look like. I'm like, well, funny, that's kind of what I do. So I guess I need to learn C++.
Yeah. No,
yeah. It was kind of a bizarre situation. But then how often do you get asked to do an intro for a conference?
Right. And have you ever done an installation size type of project like this?
Pretty much never.
So this is the the largest physical project you had done.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a weird way to think about a coding project.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the weirder projects I've worked on, but it was super fun and I would totally do it again anytime. So that's awesome. I'm hoping I get to do more things like that. A little more high stress, I guess, but it's still pretty cool.
So the collaboration came out of collaborative stuff that you were doing with him on other projects, and that just naturally fell into this other project.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how... I guess that's sort of how the internet works a lot. You're just like, oh, I know this person. I should call them up and see if they want to do this. You're like, oh, cool. You do want to do that. Awesome. And that was a terrible summary of like every internet conversation ever.
And then you like halfway through, you're like, what have I gotten myself into? It seemed so awesome when I said yes.
There's always that moment though, even in the best projects, right? You're just like, oh no, what have I done?
It's when you're like halfway across this, swimming across this giant lake, right? Like you're looking from one shore and you're like, oh, I can totally make it. And halfway through, you're like, I can't make it.
You're like, oh, it's so far.
I'm going to be drowning.
Yeah. But also, I mean, you got to challenge yourself a little bit and say yes to stuff that maybe sounds crazy and just kind of hope you'll figure it out.
Yeah. I think back and some of the best lessons I've learned have come when biting off way more than I could chew. And I end up finishing it. But that is such a good lesson as well, is don't be be afraid of biting off more than you can chew.
Yeah.
But seize the opportunity when it happens.
Be like appropriately cautious or something. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. So do you know anyone or have you worked with anyone that you could say does do this very well? The whole do personal projects and finish personal projects. Have you had any role models, so to speak, that you've worked with?
I guess it would have to be Seb, actually. He's the one that pretty much gave me that advice. And I, you know, at first I was like, yeah, whatever. But then I realized that actually really is the difference. Like you can come up with all these ideas. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with deciding this idea was not going to work out or whatever and like ditching a project. But like you don't want to have 100 projects that you've half finished and none that you can say, here it is. Here's this thing I've done. And I guess that the importance of that has just kind of really sunk in. And, he basically just does his own projects all the time and does some pretty cool stuff. So, I mean, he works with lasers.
He has a laser
what
guy.
What more do you just say than that?
Yeah.
But no, it's like, that's kind of, it's also good when someone who gives you really good advice also follows it. And you're like, yeah, you're right. That is totally working out for you. I should probably do what you're telling me.
Yeah. Yeah. And
like, you might be smart.
And it's funny, like as web developers and designers, we have a treasure trove of, or a wall that shows off all of the things that we haven't finished. When I go and look at my domain names that I've purchased.
Oh, that's so true.
It's like this project graveyard. It's so sad.
Or like those things that you thought were funny and not so funny anymore.
Yeah. And you don't want to let them go because you're like, there might still be something there. And it's like, 5 years later, you've been paying 10, 20 bucks a year for this domain name.
Yeah. There's someone on Twitter, I want to say it was Dan Moll, but maybe it was someone else, who suggested like we should all just like put our unused domains in like some kind of pool that other people can claim them for us. Like, hey, I bought this domain 5 years ago. And I didn't do anything, but you can have it if you will do something with it.
Yeah, I think there actually was a project that was actually made a few years ago that did just that. I don't know if it's still around, but I'll look it up. And if I can find it, I'll throw it in the show notes. But
because yeah. I'm sure we all have so many.
But if I do that, I almost want like an application process. Because like some of these things are my intellectual babies that will never happen. But they're things that I really want to have happen. So I don't care if someone else makes it, but it's got to be good.
And a couple years ago, I actually started letting some of them go, and it was really hard. There were some that I've probably had for like 5 or 7 years, and I don't even know if I really remember what it was I was thinking when I got them, but I've just always renewed them. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to let that go and see what happens.
So you didn't renew it. You just let it go.
I'm like, I'm going to let it go. And then every time you got that reminder, like it's expired. Yeah. You're like, oh no. But I let a few go and nothing has imploded. I haven't died. Mm. I have bought more domain names though. So.
It almost makes you wish that you'd done it earlier. It's like people keep things in storage for 10 years and then throw it all out.
You're talking like a guy who's just recently been moving or something.
Don't ever put anything in storage, ever.
No, throw out all of the things.
Just get rid of it. All right, so what projects do you have brewing now? I know you got quite a lot of talks, and there are projects associated with that, but is there anything that you have that you really want to finish right now?
I have a little web design day, kind of 5 years of web design day retrospective thing that I started a while ago and ended up having to get shelved because of a lot of client stuff and talk stuff. I'm like, no, I'm not letting this fade off into the distance. I don't care that I'm like 6 or 7 months behind schedule. I'm still going to get this little retrospective out. And I'll probably just quietly release it and not tell anyone. So I shouldn't even be talking about it because I'm sort of embarrassed by how long it's taken me. But I'm not just going to let it. I'm not letting that one go. It's going to go live.
When you say retrospective, is it a video or is it a website that just kind of talks about the history?
It's a little website that I've actually shown in a couple of talks here and there as a work in progress and just pulling together some of the data of like what happens when you get a bunch of web designers together once a year for 5 years in a row. How much coffee do they drink? Huh. What kind of, who shows up?
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. It's just, we've done that conference 5 years in a row. I felt like I should do something to kind of be like, here's what happened. 5 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And some pretty cool stuff has come out of it. So that's kind of a little pet one that I've been doing. And then one that I'm also working on right now is a screencast series that I'm calling All the Right Moves. Silly name. Also a Tom Cruise movie. That's okay. and it's just a bunch of little tutorials about web animation tips and how to do some stuff with CSS. I really wanted to kind of pull together these screencasts I've been doing under kind of a one umbrella. So that's one I'm working on finishing up too. I have a set number of episodes I'm going to do and a little, a better way to put it together than just on Vimeo. So I'm working towards that too.
Yeah.
And so far people have said those have been really helpful. So that makes me pretty happy. It's easier to work on stuff when, you put a little bit out there and people are like, hey, that was really helpful. I learned something from it. You're like, oh, okay, I should keep doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. Validation along the way is very helpful as opposed to I'm going to do this secretly and then throw it out there and hopefully everyone loves me.
That's a very tempting way to work though, right? Of just like, I'm not going to share this with anyone. Either because you're afraid someone will steal your idea or like they might say it sucks when you still think it's awesome and you just want to keep it so close and then you hope you can release it and it'll be like amazing or world changing. And I don't know if anything ever works like that. I think it's better to share stuff earlier and more often and see what kind of feedback you get from it and kind of work that way. The whole working in public, I guess, which is very scary, but I think maybe better than hiding it.
I'm personally a big fan of it, but it is. It's incredibly intimidating. And I love that it's becoming more of a trend. You've got Dan Moll, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. He's been doing more with it. You have Brad Frost, who has actively been making projects to make it easier. Mm-hmm. He did the timeline project. That's actually really cool.
Yeah. So
I love this idea. I've got to get off the soapbox because I've been working on a project called opensourcedesign.is and that's totally what we've been talking about. And I'm a huge fan. but I will keep going. So, so these projects, though, how do you determine? Because you're a consultant, right, and mm-hmm. and a contractor of sorts. Do you mm-hmm. how do you balance this with projects that are guaranteed money? Like some of these, it would be nice if you could figure out a way to monetize it, but obviously that's not the main motivation behind them.
I'm probably kind of terrible that I don't really think about how some of these side projects are going to make me money. Just like, I want to make a screencast series, so damn it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, I really have no idea what's going to come out of this. I mean, it could be nothing. It could just be, I get better at editing video. Cool. you know, it's just kind of like, this is something I want to share. I think it might be of use to some people. And, you know, I'm just going to do it. And that's usually more my motivation is like, I really want to see this happen. I think this is something I should do. Like for the Web Design Day one, it's like, I want to see a page where I have all this data from the last 5 years of Web Design Day. I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
Maybe someone else will. No idea. But from, you know, it's like those kinds of things. And, you know, I think that's, when it comes to projects you're doing for yourself, that sort of has to be your main motivation. It's just that, like, I want to see this and I want to share this, or, you know, some combination of the two, and then make something out of that. And at least no matter what, you've brought whatever it was you were thinking of or you had in mind, you know, you've made it into something you can share, and then you've accomplished that. And it doesn't really matter what happens after that if you've accomplished that bit. Yeah. And then I kind of think of like paying work as something totally different. It's just like, this is work that I'm doing for money. And I don't know, I like most of the work that I do for money as well. There's very little projects I take on just because they pay me. But still, that it's separate in my mind for some reason. And now that I'm talking about it, I don't really know why it's separate. But it is. That's how my brain works.
Yeah. So even though you do set yourself deadlines and things like that, you still obviously shift priorities to clients when those fires emerge.
You kind of have to, because it's like, you can't be like, hey, client, I know that you have this thing that's really urgent, but I have this screencast I was going to record. So.
And like three people on Twitter told me they like them. So, you know, it's important.
So, you know, I think it's important to set some deadlines for your personal projects and hold on to those and try to stick to them. But like, honestly, if sticking to a personal project deadline is going to cost you a client or a project or like money, I think it's okay to shift it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You gotta have priorities, I guess, in that sense.
So last question, we're going to go ahead and wrap up here in a little bit. But what advice do you wish you had received? What were there any points in your life when you were doing web professional stuff or even personal stuff where you're just like, I've made a horrible mistake. Why didn't I learn this before?
I don't know if this one counts as a mistake, but it's probably like advice I wish I'd listened to way earlier, and now I give it to people all the time too. And it's basically just that, you know, everyone has a story to share about the work we do, or a different and interesting perspective on the work that we do. For the longest time, I was really involved in community stuff as far as like running user groups and planning events. Usually like small meetups and stuff, but I would never actually get up and share anything. I was never the person speaking about stuff or anything like that. And I just assumed that everything I knew was stuff that everyone else knew. And what could I possibly have to share that would be, you know, helpful to all these people that come out and are like my peers? I'm like, they all know more than me. I can't possibly have anything worthwhile to tell them. Yeah. And that's like the dumbest thing you can ever think. I can say that because I totally believed that for years. You know, that's not true. Even if what you're talking about is something that everyone else knows how to do as well, your perspective on why you did it or how you did it is still totally worth sharing. Like, none of us do the same thing the same way. And I think even more so now than a few years ago, everything's changing so fast that you probably do know something that not everybody else knows. You know, I don't think... You know, I think there's enough difference in what we do and just the different ways we can accomplish things. Yeah, you probably do know stuff that no one else does, and you should share it. So I guess it's kind of like really falling for the imposter syndrome. Like, don't do that. You totally have something worth sharing and should share it, because that's what actually makes our community the awesome thing that it is. It's because people share things, and there's no reason that, you know, you have to be like somehow specially qualified to share. It's like, no, we're all here and we all have things worth sharing and we can all learn from each other. And, you know, the more we're sharing, the better, I think.
Yeah.
It's just, I think that now. A few years ago, I was like, no, I can't possibly.
Yeah.
And I wish I'd realized that sooner and kind of, you know, just gotten over whatever that was stopping me. And I think stops a lot of other people. Because it's just, I don't know, it's not helping anyone.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's a shame. I'm sure that there are still people out there who have some vital lessons, advice, methodologies, whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm. that they could share. And we are not getting the benefit of it because they're afraid or because they're making false assumptions like nobody needs this.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I've never run into a situation where I've been talking to someone about this and they're like, oh, you know, I have this thing I want to talk about, but I don't think it's good enough. Never when they have revealed to me what it is that they think is not good enough, have I ever agreed with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's always been like, no, that is actually definitely interesting and it would be interesting to these people or these people. You know, I've never had someone actually tell me something. I was like, yeah, don't bother.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that applies to a lot of things, right? Like the personal projects that you were mentioning, there's that fear mm-hmm. of if I don't get it done, someone else is going to do it and make money off of it or whatever. But usually, even if similar projects come out at the same time or close to them, they're different. They have different personalities to them.
There is. There's especially when it's something you're working on because you want to and not because someone's approached you with this project brief and has offered you money.
Yeah.
You put a certain amount of yourself into it and a certain amount of your personality, and that's going to be reflected in the project, you know, whether you're doing it consciously or not. It just is. And that's what makes all these different projects different and what gives that little twist here and there. Even if you maybe did have the same idea on the outset, the chances of you executing it in the same way are probably like next to impossible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And whatever the stat might really be on that.
And the way that you mentioned it as well, when you were talking about doing the screencast, it's probably just a good practice. Think about what's mm-hmm. the worst that could happen. And you were like, well, at least I'll get some training or get some experience doing video editing. Right. Like that's the worst case scenario is you spend time improving your skills and nobody watches it or it disappears or whatever. But the worst outcome is still pretty positive.
Yeah. There's very few things I think you could come up with to do in your time that you're not going to gain something out of, even if you don't get like, you know, even if it doesn't catch on like wildfire or whatever else, like there's still something good's going to come out of it. And if that's, you know, that's not a really bad worst case scenario, you're like, darn, I might learn something. Oh,
And I know I've given bad conference talks, or I've given some good ones and some ones that I'm not as proud of. But still, every single time that I've made a mistake or that something's gone wrong, it is made the next time better. Like it, even if it's just to scare me to work harder sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're yeah. So I like that advice. That's really good.
Our inner procrastinator always needs those scared to not procrastinate situations.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh crap, I really should have prepared better next time.
And on top of that, there's sometimes where like 2 days before the conference, I get a brand new idea and I'm like, yes, this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Scrap everything that I've done. And I need to keep that at bay sometimes too. And write it down as, hey, maybe that's a future talk and not.
Yeah. Maybe that's for next time, not for tomorrow.
I've had to change session descriptions and I don't think that goes very well when people already signed up. So.
Yeah, that could be a little bit tough, I guess.
All right. So I wanted the other couple of things that I wanted to mention before we end was your book that you have out, the Pocket Guide.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that one? That's through.
It's through Five Simple Steps.
Yes.
It's part of their Pocket Guide series, which up until this year were all ebooks, but at the beginning of this year, they started actually printing them, which is amazing. At least for me, I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
And mine is part of the third collection, and they've put the first two collections already out in print. So that means mine's in the next round, which I'm pretty excited about.
Now, are they actually pocket sized when they're printed?
They are. Well, I mean, depends on your pockets. I definitely have a lot of pockets in which those will not fit. But there's sort of a thing with like women's pants. They don't like to give you very good pockets. So that might be the problem, not the guides.
Yeah. No jeggings, that won't work.
There are no pockets in jeggings. They're not real pockets. Ah, so if you're wearing not jeggings, they will fit in your pockets. Well, that's not where you expected that to go, is
yeah.
it? But they're these really great, like, kind of short to the point guides that Five Simple Steps has put together. And I'm really excited I got to write one too. And it's basically a kind of getting started with CSS animations, because I find what we can do with them pretty great and really fun. But the spec is basically one of the worst ones I've ever read when it comes to being a human trying to understand them. So I wrote the pocket guide to explain in like real human words and with actual examples of what you can do with this stuff, you know, just as kind of if you're just starting out with it and are wondering like, what the heck do half these properties mean? So I put together something in real English. Sorry, spec people, but it's hard to read your stuff. And some examples. All the examples from the book are also on CodePen, so you can just like pop in and edit stuff and see how it works. I just thought that was a much easier way to learn this stuff, is more visually and, you know, less stark, I guess.
Yeah.
'Cause I think it's something that we should really start using more on the web. I think there's just so much opportunity to use this stuff that we've got. And I'd hate for people to avoid it just because the spec makes no sense to them.
Well, and it's one of those things that the pocket guide seems like the perfect size, because every single time I'm going to do animation, I look it up again. Because it's either I'm doing something new that I haven't thought of or I haven't thought through before, or it's been too long since I had done mm-hmm. something similar. And so I'm always...
And the property names almost make no sense.
Yeah, exactly. they're not an intuitive thing. So yeah, the pocket guide seems like the perfect way to get around that. Have it handy.
Yeah, they have a whole series of them. I haven't read them all yet. I've read a lot of them, and they're all really, really great. Perfect for plane rides too. If you're ever like just 3-hour plane ride, pocket guide done. It's great.
And if you have a neighbor sitting next to you who actually has an opinion on that, you'd make a new friend instantly. Most likely the odds are that they won't know what the heck you're reading.
Oh, have you had a plain neighbor comment on your reading before?
I have. They're
really?
Oh, yeah, they'll be like, oh, that's a good book.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And
you're like, yes, it is. Thank you, smart person.
Or I just pretend like I'm asleep all of a sudden, like narcolepsy just hits. I can't talk to you.
I don't know if that's a good move, but I like it. I'm like, oh, sorry, sleeping. What?
Oh, I sleep with my eyes open. I didn't hear you.
No, the only thing I've ever had plain seat neighbors comment on is the number of tabs I had open.
Really?
Like, wow, that's a lot of tabs.
That sounds like that's a real problem that you need to take care of.
I was like, oh man, if some stranger sitting next to me on a plane needs to comment.
Yeah. No, I have an issue with it myself, and I have to declare tab bankruptcy once in a while where I don't even look. I'm just going to close the window, because if I look, I'm going to try and keep them open for some stupid reason. Hoarding.
Yeah, if you look, you'll decide they're too important and you won't close them.
Yeah, hoarding tabs. And then I found one tab, and that's just a way of kicking the can down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw you guys tweeting about, I think it was you and Kevin tweeting about them?
Yeah, Kevin.
And I have it now, and it just hides my problem.
It's an enabling factor. It's great.
Yes. I'm like, I only have two tabs open.
Which have 2,000 tabs each.
That's not important. It's only two tabs.
Yeah. I can close them at any time. I don't care.
It saves them, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, so we've got your conferences coming up. We've got your book. You've got the Lynda title, which I had in the intro, and I'll have in the show notes.
Awesome.
Anything else? And follow you on VLH.
Yeah.
On Twitter, which the three-letter Twitter handle is awesome. I covet... Not your handle. I don't want VLH.
You can't have it. It's not even your initials.
Yeah. I'll change my name for a three-letter.
That would be odd. I really wanted to get Val, but that was already taken, so it went with my initials, and thankfully that was available, because otherwise I'm like, I don't know what to do with more than three letters.
Yeah.
As it worked out.
Yeah, you'd have to do the whole Val head.
That's too many letters. It's like, ugh.
I get tired typing that long. So,
I guess one other thing I should mention is I actually just released a second Lynda course on responsive typography, if anyone's into that.
Oh, awesome.
And I don't know. It's a new one. It's pretty fun. It's all about type. Type is cool.
Did you fly out there for that one, or did you record that one locally? Okay.
I'm not. I don't know. I guess I wouldn't ever want to do a Lynda course without the producer there. It's so helpful to have someone and like all their setup and have someone who's just like keeping track of all the hard stuff, and all you have to do is worry about, you know, like talking.
Yeah.
I love that. So I wouldn't want to work without my producer.
It's awesome. Out in Carpinteria, right?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Okay. So your two titles on Linda and all those things are in the notes, and follow Val on Twitter, and you can check out her. You got a schedule for all upcoming events that's always updated on valhead.com.
I do need to update that. Yes.
Okay. I was going to say you didn't have the second event apart on there, but yeah, all of your events will be on there, I'm assuming, as it gets closer. Okay, well, thanks so much, Val, for
having me.
Your great advice. It was good. And it was good to have an excuse to chat with you again.
I know we haven't talked in forever, so I'm glad we got to.
And I'm glad we'll be at BlendConf. I look forward to seeing you there in person again.
Definitely. It'll be good.
Okay. Thanks, Val.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode. So this week, my wife and I did something that was probably stupid. We moved. And it was not one of those epic, life-changing, let's go chase our dreams kind of moves. We moved around the corner to a house that has an identical floor plan as our previous house. And to be honest, we probably bit off more than we could chew with this one. My wife is almost 8 months pregnant. All of our extended family seem to be unavailable this week. And we really have too much stuff. In fact, right now, I am sitting in my office surrounded by boxes of too much stuff. And although I've been killing myself this week, we are super happy with our decision. Partly because it's given us a chance to go through our stuff and to get rid of some of our too much stuff. But mostly, it's because this new house has a pool. Later this summer, when it's 110 degrees here in Las Vegas, when I'm playing with the kids in the pool, I won't be remembering the pains of this move. And it will all be worth it. Web design and development is very similar. It is retroactively positive. On a project, there are parts where it is real hard work. But once the project is finished correctly, it can retroactively make all the bad memories a bit better. So if you are currently in a project where you have probably bitten off more than you can easily chew, power through it. And remember that finishing the project can make all this better. Web Friends is hosted and produced by me, Garth Braithwaite. You can follow me on the Twitters at GarthDB. You can find the show on the iTunes Store now. There's a link on webfriends.io that will take you to the podcast on iTunes. So go check it out, subscribe, and please go and rate and review the show. Web Friends also happens to be part of the Good Stuff Broadcast Network. Check them out at goodstuff.fm, where you can find this show and others. Thanks to Good Stuff, we are able to stream these interviews live on Fridays at noon Pacific at goodstuff.fm/live. I also want to thank our sponsors, Campaign Monitor and Media Temple. But most of all, I want to thank you for listening. You are awesome.